Calling the Communications and Legislative Liaison Committee meeting in order for June 4th, 2026 at 12 noon. The clerk, your roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Tran,
Here.
Director Yeo, Director Sheldon, Director Omeskwa,
Present.
Director Wiegand,
Here.
Director Green,
Here.
Director Jung,
Director Jung's here.
Director Nguyen, Director Meeks, Director Bilodeau. You do have a quorum of your committee.
Thank you. Moving on to items received too late to be agendized. Are there any items?
There are none.
There are no items too late to be agendized. Visitor participation. None in the room and none online. I see them. Moving on to the consent calendar, item 1 to 3.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Director Wiegand and second by Director Tsuo. Please call for the vote.
Roll call, Director Tran.
Aye.
Director Omeskwa.
Yes.
Director Wiegand.
Yes.
Director Green.
Yes.
Director Jung.
Aye.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. Item 4. Matters for consideration. We have a state legislative update.
Yeah, good afternoon, directors. Good to see all of you. We're going to do our best impression of Jason Gonzalez right now. Hopefully, we're equally entertaining as he usually is. A couple of things that we wanted to quickly cover with you. First off, just where we're at in the legislative calendar. It's interesting. We're only halfway through the legislative process, but we have about half as much time to get through what's left. So we just passed what you call the House of Origins deadline. Obviously, you're all familiar with this, but essentially bills have to pass out of the House they're introduced in by the end of last week. Historically, this has been a real bottleneck in terms of bills moving forward. It was a place where a lot of bills died. These days, the Democratic majorities are so significant in both the Assembly and Senate that almost every single bill authored by a Democrat passes despite that deadline. So now the process starts over in the second house. The second house is generally a lot more critical of bills, looks at them a little bit more carefully. This is where you see things actually start to fail and die. But the process is very truncated. So the policy committees have essentially 1 month, June, to look at everything. And then, the process on the floors and the process of moving bills back to their house of origin takes place after the summer recess in July, and in the final month of August. Beyond that, obviously, you've all been reading the news in the election, and at the risk of reporting what you've already heard, obviously the biggest race is the one at the top. At the moment, we've got roughly 60% of the votes having been counted. Hilton and Becerra appear headed to the runoff. That is not definitive yet, but Steyer, who was trailing both of them, would have a lot of catching up to do, but that is what his campaign is hoping for. With that 40 some percent of the vote that is left uncounted, he is hoping to catch up with at least Becerra, which he would need to get himself about another 300,000 votes if Becerra did not himself pick more up. And it would have to be quite a shakeup to get to a point where you had a Democratic runoff, essentially, where Hilton was locked out. Both Becerra and Steyer would have to pull ahead of Hilton to do that. So we will continue to keep an eye on that. But at this exact moment, it appears that, Becerra and Hilton are headed to squaring off in November. Of course, you're all familiar with, the partisan breakdown on registration in the state. And so obviously having Mr. Hilton in the race means that Republicans down ticket get a voice at the top who's advocating for their issues. But it would certainly be, it seems, a steep hill for him with a 2-to-1 registration disadvantage to kind of come out through a general election. But we shall see. And then finally, and briefly, on the budget. So this last month, we saw the governor release his May revision to the budget. Important context, the Legislative Analyst's Office, who is a very highly respected entity in Sacramento and kind of the legislature's budget advisor, has been warning now for several years that if there is a burst of the AI bubble, that the state is going to be in a very serious situation financially. In presenting his budget, the governor really went out of his way to, make clear that he was balancing the budget through 2028 and that he was not leaving his successor a bad budget situation. But the Legislative Analyst's Office was very dire in their review of his budget. The governor essentially has identified about, a little bit short of $6 billion worth of revenue adjustments and spending cuts to help make sure that the budget does not outstrip revenues. But the Legislative Analyst's Office went so far as to say that the legislature probably needed to identify another $24 billion worth of solutions to make sure the state was on strong financial footing moving forward. That's a tough thing for the legislature to do. As of right now, that does not to be, appear to be much will to do that. And so the question is, as we move forward and the structural deficit grows, at what point does this become the next governor's problem? Whether it's his first year or second year, it is likely at some point that he will be in a position, much like Jerry Brown was 15 years ago, where he's starting from scratch and trying to have to balance a budget entirely. So I'll pause there, see if Don has anything to add and whether any of you all have questions.
Doug?
I just have one quick snippet to add regarding the LAO and a related matter, which is the LAO has estimated that if there is a AI bubble that bursts, that in a similar way as the dot-com bubble, you have a $100 billion hit on the budget, which would be, I mean, that's like a natural disaster for the state. And interestingly, about that 100 billion, when Gavin Newsom came into office, the budget was 300 billion, and leaving office, it's 400 billion. So anyway, just some numbers to think about when pondering the state's future.
Thank you so much. Any comments, questions? Specifically,
I have a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go
Yeah,
ahead.
Jason, when you said you wanted to discuss the top of the topic, I thought you were going to bring up the Board of Equalization, but I guess we have a different understanding of things.
Fair enough, President Bilodeau. My apologies.
Well, that requires extra pay. Thanks for the comments. Specifically, I'd like to know, on some of the bills that the OCWD was interested in or advocating for or opposed, do we have a tracking on where they are through these marathons, legislative marathons, the last month here?
Sure. I mean, the bill that comes to mind is SB 1153 by Senator Caballero. This is a bill sponsored by one of the associations that you're a member of. It essentially installs some liability protections for water agencies who are willing to, kind of make some of the right decisions when it comes to managing their properties. It's to deal with the fact that utilities are generally kind of exposed to a lot of liability if a fire ever happens. So that bill, sponsored by Aqua, has had a little bit of a rough road through the Senate, but has ultimately made it through very cleanly and is now sitting in the assembly and pending consideration there.
I have a comment on that.
Yes, please.
So we also reached out to all of our retail water agencies, and they signed on to a coalition letter with that bill. So we did get a lot of support from our water agencies. And the other bill that we discussed but decided to watch was the AB 2568 by Johnson, who's from Riverside. And that would extend the number of days for water board members' compensation from 10 to 15. And the board decided to watch that bill. So that's the only two state bills positions that we currently have.
Can the tracker reflect that? It can, on page 10, it says support.
Oh, yeah, sorry. We'll update that.
And nevertheless, even though you are just watching it, and of course that is your position publicly up here, the bill did pass easily out of the assembly.
Specifically on the liability bill,
Yeah.
mentioned about Jason. So it's sitting over in the assembly now. What's the prognosis with that? The assembly is a little more fluid politically, I would say.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that the bill passed easily out of the Senate. So it passed on a 33-0 vote. The only thing that is likely to come up in the assembly member Bennett, a Democrat in the assembly, had a bill on wildfire planning that also applied to water utilities. And the water community actively opposed it. It did not include any of the kind of liability protections on SB 1153, and that bill died in the assembly. Mr. Bennett made an attempt when the bill was in the Senate to try to essentially jam some of his language into it. That was successfully held off by those of us who are supporting it, and Aqua did an excellent job leading that effort. So it's possible that there are some shenanigans like that that come up on the bill, but at the moment it looks like it's in a good spot, and we'll obviously keep your staff apprised as things continue to develop.
Very well. Thank you. Any comments, questions? All right, let's move on to Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. here. Thank you, Chair. Could I just have a moment of an editorial comment? I had no idea that President Bilodeau had so many friends.
624,000.
I gotta tell you, pretty impressive, but I'm a lobbyist. Don't take my word for it. Okay, Chair. Let me go through a couple of items. Congress is sort of back trying to do things. I want to first talk about the appropriations process. Yesterday, the House Committee on Appropriations gave final approval on a party line vote to the EPA spending bill, as well as other agencies under that spending bill, Interior Environment. It kept in place the $700,000 for continued federal assistance for the district for its PFAS cleanup, and kept in place an additional $746,000 for Santa Ana's PFAS cleanup. I would emphasize, while these numbers are not as high as they were in past years, they are consistent with the overall average number of funding for PFAS cleanups throughout the various congressional members' requests for such activity. So we're doing pretty well. Now we go on our way to see what happens with the Senate. My sense is, if you're keeping track of what's going to happen, I would say this: the Senate will be unlikely to take action on any of its spending bills till at least July, and there's a probably equal chance that they'll wait until September time frame, maybe even after the elections or the midterms come and go. So we are still looking at getting funding for the PFAS cleanup. But you probably won't see it, as become tradition, until at least November, December, being enacted into law. So that's where we are on the funding side. Turning attention to PFAS, it's been a busy couple of weeks on PFAS. There was a meeting that we attended with Administrator Lee Zeldin of EPA and Secretary of Health Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Talking about PFAS. This was I'd call it a broadly attended meeting of about 100 people, a lot of agency staff in the audience. But the basis of the presentation was twofold. First, it was a chance for Administrator Zeldin to call once again for liability protection for passive receivers. That was very important. He did it publicly and did it forcefully. The second thing he did, which would be of direct interest to you, is reaffirmed his agency's decision, which was embodied in a proposed rule that's out for public comment right now, to pull back the Biden-era rulemaking that would use a novel, if you call it, approach to defining what the cleanups or what the drinking water standard should be for PFAS family chemical members outside of PFOA and PFOS. What they would do is say you put sort of like a witch's brew together of these chemicals, and the EPA would decide what the hazard threat is from that witch's brew, and then you would have to meet that number. The Safe Drinking Water Act says that you have to, EPA issues chemical by chemical specific drinking water standards. So that's why the agency is rolling this rule back. It is also currently under litigation for the same reason that the Biden administration used an inappropriate way to set a standard. So, like I said, that rule to rescind the rule that was put out in January, or excuse me, a little earlier than January of 24, that is under public comment, and we fully expect that the rescission will stay in place and EPA will revisit how to designate additional PFAS chemicals for regulation under the Safe Drinking Water Act. Turning attention also now to PFAS liability, we will be participating in a meeting with Senator Capito, who is the chairwoman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. We will be speaking with her staff about a liability protection measure, approach, legislation, what have you, that could be part of the Senate Clean Water, Drinking Water reauthorization bill. This meeting is going to take place latter part of June, and it will be with ourselves and three or four other passive receiver advocates. The reason I find this important is this is the first in recent months indication that we are moving slowly but surely forward and trying to find resolution on the liability exemption from PFAS contamination, or at least touching PFAS as a drinking water agency. So that's all encouraging news. I will say, just for the record, that we aren't there yet, but we are starting to see real progress in hopefully getting to a point where they have legislation that can pass through the Senate and the House and go to the president's desk. So that's where we are there, Chair. And then finally, I just want to point out that the administration yesterday, it was sort of reported, it isn't official yet, but we will have a new Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner. Her name is Aubrey Betancourt. You may recognize that name because she was in Trump 1.0, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Water and Science at the Department of the Interior. Recently, she served as the head of the Natural Resources Conservation Service in the Department of Agriculture. And so we anticipate, without doubt, she'll be in there as an acting, most likely, until she's confirmed. If in fact, let's just play this out, if in fact the Senate is unable to bring the nomination up for a vote, which I find highly unlikely, she can still serve in an acting capacity for 210 days, which essentially, if you're keeping score of what that means, you're going to have somebody in the commissioner's seat that will be there leading up to the sort of last few months of the Trump administration. So going forward, new leadership at the Bureau of Reclamation. So that's where we are there, Chair. And then let me just close by giving an update on where we are or where we aren't at with respect to the roundtable discussion on water policy. We attempted to put together, as you know from previous presentations, respond to a request for a federal roundtable discussion on both water recycling, Prado Dam, what have you. And we put out a request to the delegation at large. Unfortunately, we could not get a date or time that worked for the entire delegation at large. So we went back and spoke to the delegation and said that, you know, we were thinking about doing it at a later date. And the response we got was essentially, you know, nice, it was nice that you tried to do this, but we prefer not to go forward at this point. So for now, the federal roundtable is, to put it politely, on hold. If not, it's no longer going to happen, at least for several months at the earliest time.
Thank you so much. Any comments, questions? Well, thank you for the progress report. So
thank you, Chair.
That's moving on to, I think I, well, basically the two items from the state and the federal, we'll put it on the agenda for, for the 17th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. Any directors or
announcements?
Yes, I'm sorry.
So we, every 2 years, our legislative advocacy services contracts expire.
Yes.
And so, and they expire in August. So we have them on the agenda for your approval. Just in case you want to change anything, there's time to do it before it actually expires. That's why we're bringing it to you in June and not in August.
I see it.
So it's
the,
there's some consent.
Yeah, we passed it.
Oh,
we
okay.
Passed it.
Okay.
We passed it. Okay.
Yeah, we took care of that.
Okay.
So it will, the consent items will be on the calendar. So we're covered.
And Chair Chair, I just wanted to mention that the only member of our congressional delegation that had a possible June date that would work was Congressman Correa. But again, it's not feasible for all of them to get on the same date. So we were going to get back to him today, his office, okay, and let them know.
Okay, I would think that given the timing and the season that we're in, there are other priorities, I'm sure, for them.
Of course.
So,
that's the way ahead.
Yes.
So, yeah, this is an ongoing project anyway. And it's not so time sensitive.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we'll handle that. Any other directors, announcements, or reports? Seeing none, general manager's announcements.
I did want to make the board aware that the grand jury is going to come out with a PFAS report in a couple of days.
Oh.
That'll become public. We met several times with the grand jury. They got deep into the weeds. We were amazed at the detail they were looking at. But the report will come out. We expect it to be very complimentary of the Water District and recommending things like even more educational material for residents. And producers put out a consumer confidence report every year and maybe beefing that up with more PFAS information. That's something that producers would have to do. But we'll get the report soon.
They haven't sent it to you already?
It's on my desk. I got it 5 minutes ago. And it said I can distribute it to the board, but no further until the public version comes out. So
what exactly are they focusing on? You're talking about PFAS. Is it on contamination or?
They got into everything. They wanted to know how we were splitting the O&M cost for the PFAS treatment plants. We were very surprised. They got into the details of the UCI study. Where does PFAS come from? It's kind of interesting. There's a person who used to work at a lab out in the Inland Empire.
Oh, okay.
Very technical person who was kind of driving it all.
Okay.
And so, but it says things like we should try to get more grant money and we should sue the manufacturers, and which we're doing all of that.
And they're doing that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, anything else?
That was it.
All right. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you. You all.